You're listening to Beyond the Pipe with Chris Morgan and Sean Ring. How was your Halloween?
When was Halloween?
A couple days ago.
Like 2 days ago, 3 days ago? We didn't do anything.
I was Willy Wonka.
I saw your outfit and it was pretty badass. Now you have a...
You have
a great smoking jacket now.
It was on point. It's a little thin for a smoking jacket, but I mean, for a cheap costume, I don't know how cheap it was. My wife bought it. But for a cheap costume... It was very well thought out.
It looked pretty well made, to be honest.
And it was Gene Wilder. Gene Wilder is, in my mind, the only Willy Wonka. I would love to see Willy Wonka remade as the original. Like, if you've ever read the original Willy Wonka, I think it's called Willy Wonka. No, it's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Honestly, I had no idea that it was even a book. I didn't know
it was terrifying.
Really?
Yeah. And there's all these weird theories surrounding, you know, I think it's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is the book. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory was the movie adaptation. It is theoretically terrorizing, if that makes sense. Like the way that it's written, you're kind of like, wait, what are these Oompa Loompas? Like, what? They didn't come from a random place. The whole globe has been explored. Where'd they come from?
And that there's this theory that I've never thought about that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this was written at a time where, like, yeah, we've already seen the four corners of the globe. Like, there's a theory that the kids that are invited to the chocolate factory become the Oompa Loompas.
Like the ones that don't make it out? You know, yeah. Okay, as an adult, looking back on, like, the original one, it was a pretty messed up movie.
Well, the original was happy. Like when you watch it, you're like, it's a little weird. It's a little Gene Wilder-ish. You know, he's very extreme, like the yelling, you know, but I mean, that's because he's.
Yeah, but didn't kids like
Gene
die?
Gene Wilder.
Didn't kids die in it?
Well, they.
Like that one chick drowned in the chocolate river?
No, that was Augustus Gloop, and he got sent to the fudge room. So he just needed to be pulled out of the machines. Violet Beauregard was chewing some three-course dinner gum, and when she got to the blueberry pie course or whatever, she turned into a blueberry. And what was the other one? I'm blanking on the other people, but Mike TV.
Yeah, yeah.
Got stuck in the TV, and shit. My wife just went as the red-dressed chick. What was her name? Why am I blanking on this? It's really weird.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's just...
Veruca Salt.
Yeah.
Veruca Salt. And Veruca Salt fell down when they did the golden goose egg laying. Anyway.
Okay, but hang
die,
on. There's a lot
didn't
of questions.
Survive.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions on what actually happened to them. It's not really explained, right? I mean, not from what I remember. No. And looking back on that, like as an adult, it's kind of a terrifying movie. You've got these characters that you get to know, and then... The good boy gets out, and as a kid, you don't think about, like, huh, I wonder what happened to the rest of him. It doesn't matter. Charlie gets the chocolate factory now.
Yeah, it's like
what the
most...
The hell happened
and what happened...
Him?
Well, there's actual stories written about this, like, what happened with Charlie. Like, there, a lot of them is, like, fan art, sort of. Like, it's not, like, you know, licensed or, you know, exclusive to the brand producing these or anything. But a lot of the stuff is, like, a theoretical outcome. And like what happened with Charlie and what happened with all the other people. I mean, yes, theoretically, those people are dead. The other kids are dead.
I mean, there's no explanation otherwise, to be honest. So,
well, Veruca Salt fell down a chute into the incinerator. So
she died.
But see, Willy Wonka was like, well, I don't remember if it's Tuesdays or Wednesdays that they run the incinerator. So it's just maybe. They're dead, but no one really knows. You really think if someone like blows up the size of a giant blueberry and they're all purple and they have to go to the squeezing room, they're going to survive that? No. The squeezing room? Come on.
The juicing, was it the juicing room or the squeezing room?
Juicing room. Yeah, the juicing room. So,
wow, yes, what a terrifying movie if you think about it. Like, you could so easily turn that into an adaptation of a horror film.
They almost did with the Johnny Depp interpretation that they had.
See, and I never watched
that. It was creepy as shit.
I've seen it
a few times.
Now, was Johnny Depp playing, was he playing Charlie grown up and running the chocolate factory, or was he playing Willy Wonka?
I think there's a theory on that, too.
That he's like...
He is Charlie, and he became Willy Wonka. Because it is so... It's very much like his other stuff that he's done. Like, Sweeney Todd is on its face a musical, and it's actually a really well-made film.
Sweeney Todd's one of my favorite
So
movies.
Dark. It's yeah, so dark.
It is.
But it's gorgeous. It's like, if anyone, I'm going to do a movie recommendation here. Everyone needs to go out and find it. I don't know where you can find it. Probably Amazon Prime or Amazon Prime Video, whatever they call it. Perfume. The Story of a Murderer. You absolutely have to see this movie.
I still haven't seen it.
It is so frighteningly dark and also one of the best cinematically gorgeous movies I've ever seen.
Isn't the premise of it, without giving anything away, I mean, I guess I can't because I haven't seen it, but isn't the premise that this guy wants to make the perfect perfume, so he's... Like, he finds all these women that are beautiful that have the perfect essence, and then he kills them to try to capture their essence?
Yeah.
Yeah, creepy.
Yeah, it was super creepy, but Dustin Hoffman's in it, and he's an awesome character. There's a few other people in it. But it's one of the best, probably mistakenly awesome movies ever.
Mistakenly awesome. That sounds like a great band name.
Like, I don't think they it does sound like a good band name, but I don't think when they put everyone together, I don't think they realized the chemistry that was going to be involved. I say that, and it's kind of a pun.
Because of the chemistry.
Yeah, and they're perfumers and all that. But the chemistry and the way that they played off each other was amazing. I'm a huge movie guy, so there's that. There's also another movie that I recently watched from 1938 with Peter Lorre in it. You know, he was used to play in like the cartoons when you were a kid. He was like the creepy guy with dark bags under his eyes. And he's like, hey, how you doing? You know, he's got that creepy...
I don't know who you're talking about.
If you Google him or DuckDuckGo him or whatever, like, you'll see what I'm talking about. Peter Lorre, L-O-R-R-E. He was in a movie called I'll Pay Millions. Highly recommended. It's on YouTube. It's free. It's such a good movie. 1938. Still got it. Anyway, we've got today a great lineup of Q&As, and we're doing this for a very particular reason. Nice little peach sorbet dessert to round off our season here at Beyond the Pipe. We're going to take a little bit of time off, regroup, do some recordings, upgrade some equipment, possibly come back live, even maybe come back with some like legit studio setting. And we're going to really get down into the nitty gritty of not just pipes, but all the other stuff. Like we said before in the first episode, I think it was, this podcast is not so much a pipe episode. It's a pipe guy, gal episode or pipe guy, gal podcast. But talking about other stuff that we do too.
Yeah.
And I think
touching on the fact that we all like different things, not just pipes. You know, we're all multidimensional. This is in no way a wrap up, but it's in no way an ending or a conclusion to the Beyond the Pipe podcast. It's just, this time of year is extremely busy coming up to the holidays. Chris and I don't have time. We both have, you know, we're full-time makers and we have other businesses outside of pipes, and it's just a busy time. So we want to be able to give the most to the podcast when we can, rather than having it just, you know, having to throw something together when we have time to. That just doesn't seem fair to our audience, because we want to provide good content. So I think a focus of this next season, which we're kind of shooting towards the first of the year, again. Maybe, yeah, maybe
there might be a stray episode somewhere in there.
Yeah, we might have a stray episode in between now and then. But starting up, you know, first of the year, January sometime, getting back into it, we'll still do, you know, every other week at least. Sometimes we might throw another one in there, or like Chris said, we might do lives, probably on Instagram, maybe on YouTube. I think we'd really like to focus more on pipes. That's kind of been some of the feedback we've gotten from the first season. People love what we do, but all the episodes that we talk more about pipes and tobacco, people have really enjoyed that. You know, I mean, go figure, we're a pipe audience driven podcast,
but also beyond.
Beyond, yeah. It'll be cool. We're stoked about it. Like, yeah. Chris said, we're going to do some, you know, upgrades to our setting. Maybe have a better, like, recording studio so we can have the best sound quality and get some better...
I'm going full Joe Rogan, dude.
We're just going to be the next Joe Rogan.
I'm going to build a bunker. Sean's going to move out to California. We're going to have a bunker studio.
You'll probably move to Montana if that's going to happen.
That is probably going to happen.
There's way less rules on building a bunker in Montana than California.
That's a good point. But yeah, we've got some really killer guests lined up too. Those seem to be really fun episodes for people to listen to and to kind of get a different view on things. But yeah, what we're going to do today is round it all off for a little bit with some Q&As. And some of these questions are kind of cool because they're not the normal asked questions. So what do you have? What's the first one you got down there, Sean?
Okay, the first question we got, and thank you all for whoever responded to our Instagram, you know, posts of Ask Me Anythings and the emails we've gotten. That's been fantastic for adding quality content. Okay, first question we got here. What is a pipe shape that you enjoy making but doesn't sell well? That's interesting.
I would say anything that's expensive. I mean, like, what does it, like, oddly enough, my tastes have always been the opposite of, and I'm coming from a pipe maker's perspective, not a pipe seller. So this wouldn't include Bones, because the Bones catalog is just massive. So there's something in there for everyone. And there's always someone that likes something. But from a pipe maker's perspective, it's usually the more expensive pipes, things that are, you would look at it, you're like, damn, that's cool. And then you know immediately that there's no way you could afford it, you know? And that's kind of how I look at guys. Like, there's pipe makers out there, I'm not going to name names, but there's guys out there, you're just like, dude, that is a wicked piece. Actually, I'm going to name names. Brighton De Los Santos. Pretty sure I can't afford anything he makes.
Yeah.
But his pipes are off the hook. Like,
possibly one of the greatest pipe makers that walks the earth today.
Oh, easily. I'd say, yeah. I would say top, overall, I would say top 3 to 5.
Yeah, I'd say so too. I think there's a balance of production level as well. Like, yeah. If you've got somebody who makes one pipe a year, but it's like the most amazing thing in the world that you've ever seen, is he a pipe maker, or does he just do a one-off sculpture? You know, that's kind of different.
Yeah.
But
I agree with you on that.
Yeah. I think,
I don't know. I had to throw him in. I was looking at some of his stuff earlier and I was just like, geez,
it's so insane. Cool. Pushing the boundaries of what Briar really should be able to do. That's freaking cool. Yeah. That's the innovation we need these days. Okay. So back to the question, what is a pipe shape that you enjoy making that doesn't sell well? For me, I think this is kind of I don't think the question really fits, because, gosh, this is in no way bragging, but I don't think I've ever had a pipe that didn't sell. I guess you could go with the trends. If you're making something the opposite of what a trend is going on, you might have a slower time selling it, but I'm not going to make something that's super weird that I'm not confident is going to sell. Like, it's not worth my time, to be honest. It's like, I'm not going to... Well, you're in a totally different situation as a maker, though.
It's a different kind of pipe making, though. Like, when I was doing, like, all the wild stuff that I was doing before, I would make something, and I would make it the best I could. And it would be like, damn, that pipe's cool, but, like, either it's too expensive because, you know, I spent, like, a week on it, or it's just too out of the box. Like, I did a called a scorpion fish, and it was basically this crazy blowfish with the tail, and the tail was literally a scorpion tail, and it had like a stainless steel stinger on it, and it was A, quite expensive because it was a lot of work, and B, it was just so outside the box that people were like, I don't think I would smoke that if I had it. So then you reduce your audience size, really. I think a lot of Sean, you know, being as humble as he is, there's not as much stuff that he can name because his job is to make pipes. He is what I consider to be a craftsman pipe maker, whereas I would be an artist pipe maker. I would make fewer pipes, more sporadically, maybe more fancy in a way, and I would sell less at a higher price. Sean would sell a lot more at his price point because he is in, like we talked about before, that sweet spot, you know, good, fast, cheap. Cheap being the wrong terminology for this, but good, fast value. And so, I mean, in my opinion, I've had a lot of stuff, or in my pipe making experience, I've had a lot of stuff that would just sit because it's a weird shape, usually horns for me. But I think for Sean, it is his business to not have that happen, right?
Oh, totally. If it takes a pipe more than 2 days to sell, that's weird. And yeah. Again, this is by no means bragging. It's just, I'm having a hard time answering this question because I've built my entire business around making sales and making a quality product. And you had mentioned that certain shapes might, you know, cut out some of your audience because they're too expensive or they're too out there. But honestly, I think most of that, when you cut out an audience, is price. Mm-hmm. And there are some pipes that should not even be half what they're selling for. And a lot of it's just, yes, a lot of it's based on hype. I think people need to stop buying into hype, and they need to start educating themselves on what a quality pipe should go for and what to look for. And that's something I'd like to talk about in our next season, is having a little bit of a pipe educational series that we can talk about the basics that aren't talked about anymore. We are in a world now of right now. You have to buy something. You have to have something. Nobody seems to really do the research on why they're buying it anymore, at least in the pipe world.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that needs to be corrected, I'd say. And the only way that's going to happen is if the audience and all of our customer base starts having standards again. And part of that is knowing what makes a good pipe to justify the price that they're asking. So
yeah.
I think there needs to be a shift in the mentality of that, I guess.
Well, that's always been there. I mean, there's people forever where you'd be like, that, how is that so expensive? You know, but it goes through trends, and there's all kinds of weird stuff like that. But I think that's a good topic to go into. The one thing about being a pipe maker, if we're going to go on a little bit of a tangent, it's really not up to the other pipe makers to be, how do I put this? The market decides, you know, and I say that in, you know, life will find a way. It's how I kind of think of it in my head. The guy's name, I'm blanking on the name. What's his name from Jurassic Park?
I don't remember.
God, I'm totally blanking. Anyway.
Goldsman?
But, yeah. Gold.
Destin? No.
No, we're butchering this right now. I'm totally blanking on his name.
There's so many jokes about him just being a baller.
He is. He's like the nerdier Keanu Reeves.
That's perfect.
But basically, like, the market will decide eventually, and the people that are, I mean, it really is the great equalizer. If you're charging too much, eventually you will sell less and you'll drop your prices. Then maybe you'll sell more. And if you don't drop your prices, then you go extinct. And that's what happened to us recently in the past few years. Like, a lot of pipe makers didn't keep up, if you didn't segue into other stuff, like for me, my segue was going into factory pipes. That was the only way I probably could have survived. My stuff was expensive. I spent a lot of time on my stuff. I'm not the fastest pipe maker. So I kind of played to my strengths and spent a lot of time on things. But anyway, we're going off into the woods on this one. But yeah, I mean, I think that probably pretty much answers it.
Okay, so next question that kind of corresponds with that one. What is your favorite and least favorite shapes to make?
Ooh. Favorite would be, I would say my favorite would be like blowfishy type stuff. Like get a really nice block, but you don't really know what the grit. Like I always do this. I end up getting commission and I'm not a big like reader of the blocks from the outside when it comes to that stuff. Like I'll just make it into what it wants to be made into.
See, and I don't have that kind of brain. My mind does not allow me to do that to where I make something that's not methodically done.
Yeah, and that's the difference.
Yeah, I just can't do that.
That's a craftsman pipe maker and an artist pipe maker. Like they're equal, but in totally different schools of making. And I freaking enjoy that because you get to crack open a block and you're sitting there with a spray bottle and, on the wheel and you're just shaping it down, you know, shape it and then drill it. And
yeah, but from a craftsman's,
some really cool shit.
But from a craftsman's side of things, you can get that too. I mean, I can plan out a block, know what it's going to be, and then still be surprised. Like, holy shit, that was even better than I thought.
Yes, you can definitely, but it's fitting into more of like the freehands category or the, you know, conventional pipe categories is kind of what I mean. Like I'm coming at it from like, who knows what this is going to look like? And you just start hacking off bits of wood and you're like,
let's just make a thing that's got two holes in it.
That's my point. Like okay. I had a customer ask, you know, can you do this pipe? I'm like, I can make you a pipe that looks like a duck. I mean, I can make a pipe that looks like anything, but it just needs to have place for the holes. You know, that's kind of where the no rules part of pipe making comes in. The rules part comes in to where your draft hole must be at the bottom of your chamber. Your airways must not be articulated in such a fashion that you can't fit a pipe cleaner down it. There's like guidelines, but in the vast majority of it, there's no rules. You can,
well, I've seen there's some wicked rules, stuff. But then there's also shoulds. Like,
yeah.
Should you shape a billiard that way? No. Can you? Yeah. As long as the rules of are your airway centered and in the bottom met?
Yeah.
Yeah. But should you make it that way? No. Should you carve something into it? Maybe. If your customer wants that, but I don't know.
It's personal preference from a maker's stance. And I mean, I like messing around with like formless type stuff, like blowfish and all the weird stuff. And I would say probably my least favorite is anything full bent. In fact, I have turned down, I can't even tell you how many commissions where they're like, yeah, I want an Umpal. I'm like, nope, not doing that. Would you settle for a quarter bent pipe? Because I just do not like making them.
Okay, so I've made a handful of Umpals, like true full bent Umpals, and they suck. They suck to make. Like I did it and it worked and it passed a pipe cleaner just fine and they smoked great, but that would probably be my least favorite is almost anything full bent. Not because I'm afraid of a challenge, not because it's more work. It's just, it disrupts the flow of how I normally make a pipe because you have to put so much more care into something that on every other pipe is one of the most simple things to do, is getting the airway to line up correctly. And I also find that Umpals are a little bit of a, they kind of break up the rules a little bit, because if you have an airway perfectly in the bottom of an Umpal, that's damn impressive. Mine end up a little higher than I would like because I don't know how to drill a curved hole. And I'm not okay with the certain styles out there that allow you to drill a hole in the back and then plug it. Like, certain countries are okay with that. And I don't think that's proper pipe making. I think that's cheating, to be honest. And I mean that in the most loving way to all my fellow makers who do that. But don't do that.
We'll go over this. We will go over this in the next season or seasons. But, I mean, if you guys can picture in your mind the proper way to do an oompaul, like the best way I've ever seen it done was actually quite impressive. I didn't know about this until, you know, I finally learned about it. But you basically drill your airway almost parallel to your tobacco chamber, right? And that airway does not pierce the tobacco chamber. It runs parallel. And then you come in with a Dremel, with like an end mill bit sort of thing. And you cut in, you just divot into the backside of the bottom of the chamber, and you connect those two airways. Now, if you do it right, you can ramp it so it comes up, and it'll pass a cleaner from the stem to the chamber. And there's a couple guys that do that, and it's very impressive.
That's extremely impressive.
It works. You just really have to be good in that sense, and that is a craftsman skill. That is not an artist skill, in my opinion. That is something where you're great with math. You're great knowing where things are inside the block. So your least favorite would be that. What's your favorite thing to make?
Gosh, that's so hard. Anything quarter bent, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the way a quarter bent pipe feels in the mouth, in the hand. I think it gives the most opportunity for the most amount of shape variations. I know this isn't really answering that question, but there's so many adaptations of what you can do to make a bent apple into a different shape, you know, or a bent egg or a squat tomato. You know, you don't really see a lot of those shapes in a straight pipe. Now, personally, I do enjoy smoking a straight pipe better than a bent most of the time. But as far as making goes, I think it's more fun to have the swoopiness and, you know, see the nice S-curve flow of how the pipe's going, because I think that works very well with grain patterns for the most part. You know, it's extremely rare that you have a block that you could have an absolute perfect straight grain billiard on. So chances are that block would have been better off as a slightly bent billiard. So yeah. I think that's more fun to me.
Yeah.
Is, I guess, like I said, I guess it's not really answering the question, but making something that is, that's a bent pipe, really.
I mean, and my tastes have changed. Like when I started making pipes, you heard the, and this will go into our next question about what point did you decide to start making pipes? But I didn't know a whole lot about pipes before I started making pipes. I mean, even from like a hobbyist point of view, I had a pipe from my grandfather and all that. My tastes developed in the very beginning. You know, I got a lot of really good information and I got a lot of really bad information. That seems to be something that's like going around, and that's just a rite of passage being a new pipe smoker.
But in our second season, we're going to be trying to alleviate a lot of those questions and wrong turns that people make, because there's a lot of really simple answers that aren't being talked about.
We'll give you a shortcut. I'm not going to say that it's wrong, because I think failure in a controlled environment is a way to learn. But it'll save you a lot of time and energy. And it won't even be pertaining to, like, you know, you need to buy our shit because it's better than everyone else's. Not true. There's a lot of pipe makers that are far, 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 far better than Sean and I in our own respects. At this point, who even knows what my skill level is? I haven't made a pipe in a little while. So I'm quite rusty. But
you're a pipe maker?
I know that. Yeah, really. When I got into it, everyone was saying, oh, the Holy Grail is a perfectly straight, tight-grained billiard. And it's a perfectly cross-cut block for a blowfish. And that's the only way to do it. And if you do it any other way, it's wrong. I've called bullshit on that and proved it so many times. I enjoy facets when I'm making. I like the challenge of isolating grain patterns into facets. It's kind of like a, I don't know, you could call it kind of like an OCD maybe. You know, like when you go to like a restaurant, I mean, it's probably, you've seen this in movies where like you're at a restaurant and you got peas and carrots on your plate. It's mixed and you divide them up. Like, I'm not a type A person, but I really do enjoy like the tediousness of separating grain patterns and creating facets on pipes. So in my mind, the most impressive stuff is where you take a block that has interesting grain, not perfect, but interesting grain, and you make it the best representation and display of that particular grain in that pipe. And that's, to me, that's the holy grail. Like, when I see a fully straight grain pipe, unless it's a, I will give one caveat to this. There have been a handful of pipes in the past. They're very, 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 very rare that have almost 360 degree bird's eye. That's almost impossible to do. And the shape usually doesn't lend itself, no shape lends itself to that unless it's like a ball.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you had a pipe that was large enough to do it, and you had a burl that was like the size of a freaking lemon, to where you could have grain radiating out from the center in all directions. Mm-hmm. I mean, then it wouldn't be possible otherwise. Not really.
Well, no, I mean, that's where you would place, you know, your pipe inside the burl, but it's not just a small burl. It can be a big burl. The problem is that most burls, the centers are dead. Like, the center is usually, you know, on a young plant, if you can imagine it this way, a young plant growing, it's softer, it's not as robust, bugs are going to get to it, sand is literally going to be incorporated in it, if not rocks. Yeah, you should see some of the stuff that they have found inside burls is shocking. Because the burl is part of the root system, and it's just going to start enveloping everything around it, which is why you have sand pits. That's why they exist. But it's more the orientation of the stock to the burl, or if the burl was clean enough in the center to do this. And it's pretty damn rare. But I have seen a few examples where mass uniformity of the grain is actually just stunning. And it's usually more stunning to a maker because they realize how rare that is. And that's it. But.
Well, but I think part of what I would like to talk about in our next series is the educational side of it, is getting not only makers to get excited about things like that again, but getting our customers to as well. You know, I've been very fortunate to know a lot of highly, highly influential collectors that have taught me. I mean, I've learned more from talking to collectors that have been around a long time than I have from other pipe makers. And
definitely,
I would love for more people to understand why I get excited that the grain on this tugboat that I just made works perfectly for the shape in every aspect. The whole bottom is bird's eye, the whole top of the shank's bird's eye, and then you've got a perfect, you know, radiating fan of straight grain along the sides. Like, the amount of people that look at that and they see the shape and they don't see the grain is shocking to me as a maker. But I just made that, you know, I just spent the time designing it for that very reason. And I think more people should understand that too, because a lot of people look at a pipe as an overall shape instead of, you know what? I don't really like the shape as much, but holy shit, that grain matches, like, the grain is oriented perfectly. I get excited about that kind of stuff. I like briar nerdery, I guess.
That's a good sign that you do. I mean, there are pipe makers that are not excited about what they do. And I've gone through mass periods where I'm just like, nah, I'm not excited about any of this. And that's usually when I have commissions. I don't like doing commissions. But I do really like seeing that stuff. They're like little gifts that you get for your hard work. And they don't pop up often, but when something just clicks, it's one of the best feelings in the world. But what point did you decide to start making pipes? Like, where were you at in your life and what was happening when you decided to?
So I used to restore straight razors, And one of my good friends, Steve Palmer, I actually knew him from the straight razor community. I was doing some restorations. I just happened to take a picture of a razor that I just restored, and it was propped up with a cigar. And so he had asked me about that because he's also into cigars. And we just kind of got to talking, and then he just asked me if I ever smoked a pipe. And then, you know, I did, like, 3 or 4 years prior to that in college. You know, we'd go to the smoke shop and I got a pipe and probably some Captain Black or some crap like that. And I guess I was always interested in it, but he really got me really interested and I realized how much like relaxation there could be from it. And it wasn't just something you do when you're drinking in college. There was like a whole lifestyle to it that I didn't realize. And so then when I get into things, I just go head first. So I jumped in, started looking at pictures of expensive pipes and all this kind of stuff. I'm like thinking, I'm never going to be able to afford this. And I'm like super frugal anyway. So even if I could, I probably wouldn't. And so I just got a pipe kit and I just started making them. Very shortly after I got my first like real pipe, I mean, probably within a month, I got a kit and I started making, and I mean, the rest is all history, and it's nearly 10 years now.
Yeah. That's kind of how I got into it. I actually got back into it after a while. Like I smoked a pipe in high school, oddly enough. Went to college, didn't really smoke a pipe there, realized that my degree track that I was on wasn't going to pay off eventually as a job. So I actually got lucky now in retrospect, looking back on everyone who got these degrees that are basically worthless now. it was a marine biology degree. So
I have an MBA in basket weaving.
That's actually pretty impressive.
I know. That's why I said it.
That's you're in an artsy craftsy business too with your wife. So it works out. But yeah, mine is more a hobby now, like the marine bio stuff. I just enjoy it. But it is funny knowing that, like, if I went into that, I wouldn't be at all in any aspect of the same life that I am right now if I had done that. Like, you can't have a family usually as a researcher on a boat 4 to 6 months out of the year. Like, it would have been a completely different life choice. But now I came back and I realized like I do have handy skills, and I do like pipes, and I enjoy working with wood. And so I got a pipe kit from Pimo, which is now owned by Vermont Freehand. And I did that. I just started buying pre-drilled blocks. And you can get those from Steve Norse now, VermontFreehand.com. And you just, it's a ready to go. It's stemmed up. It's got the holes in it. It's ready to go. You just have to shape the body. And I did that for maybe 10 times. And then I started getting, better choices through Steve. Steve's actually my oldest friend in the business. It's kind of weird to think that now, like after all these years.
How long has it been? Like, but he was, what, 16 years?
Shit. Almost 17 years, I think.
That's crazy.
So weird.
Almost so two weird decades in the pipe industry.
It's been a long, and I still talk to him every once in a while. He's a lot busier and I'm a lot busier, but it is funny to like know that like he was the first probably. So, going through all this, going through all this has been kind of funny, you know, with the questions, looking back in retrospect, but I just started off that way, and then it just started evolving. Like, you know, you go from pre-drilled blocks to, well, now you just have pre-drilled blocks that are not stemmed, and you put the stems on. You make the stems. Maybe you drill the blocks, and then you start getting full on into it where you're doing rod stock, and you're doing, you're buying like a dozen blocks at a time. And then I got crazier into it where I was buying like a lot of briars directly from Mimo, you know, And that's pretty much it. There's no real rhyme or reason why people get into this stuff. I always joke around, like, most pipe makers are a little crazy, because who in their right mind would pick pipes to make? Like, there are other things that you can make and get really good at and make a whole bunch more money doing it. But I think a lot of what draws us in is the atmosphere and the community. And it's not even for me about the pipes anymore. It's the people, to be honest. Like, I just enjoy the type of people that I've been around for all these years. It's just been cool, you know?
Yeah, totally cool. And I think for those that are listeners that are considering getting into pipe making, I think a pipe kit is a great way to go, because I know this isn't really part of our question, but segueing here. I think it's a good way to go, because from the pipe kits that I've used, you know, a long time ago, and the ones that I've seen, they're usually made with pretty good briar, and they're made in a way, they're made from a guy who knows what he's doing. And the ones that I've seen have got pretty impressive grain. And I think that's kind of done on purpose, so that way you, like, your first pipe you make can be like, oh, holy shit, look, this grain's awesome. This is so cool. And then it kind of gets you hooked, which is fantastic. I think that's a great start. And it's kind of funny, a few weeks ago, there was a question in one of the groups, and there was an answer that was just utterly fantastic. And, in most of the pipe groups, there's the question of what briar or what woods can I use for pipes? This is asked like twice a day, at least, sometimes more.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And Walt Kanoy actually answered this question. I think it was in the pipe makers group, and it was fantastic. His answer was, it was art. Like, the what he wrote out was fantastic. And it was basically, everything's been tried. Every reason to not use something has been figured out. Stick with what people are telling you. If somebody says, make a pipe out of briar, and you say, but can I make it out of zebra wood? Sure, but it's going to suck. Just don't do that. Just the simple answer is the best answer, especially when you're starting.
Yeah.
So make briar pipes. That,
yeah, there's a reason the car tires are made out of rubber and not wood. You know what I mean? Like, all this stuff has been tried forever. Granted, we've only had 150 years to figure it out. Theoretically, the modern pipe has only been around that long. But actually, not theoretically. Literally, it's only been around 150 years-ish. That's something that has driven me nuts for years, to be honest. Like, I have tried to chime in and answer that question so many times. Like, now I will say this. If you have a stone fruit tree in your yard, plum, cherry, apricot, something like that, by all means, hack a limb off and make a pipe. As long as you dry it properly, it'll be fine. Is it going to be as durable as briar? Not even close. Is it going to taste better? Probably not. But if that's what you have to work with and that's just what you have, then go for it. You know, you can make them out of birch. You can make them out of whatever. But you're not going to get the same kind of results like we get. Like, briar is such a weird material in the sense that it is hard, but it's also very soft at the same time.
It's very forgiving.
Yeah. I mean, you can carve a face into it. Try carving a face into a piece of oak. Enjoy doing that. You know what I mean? The grain structure doesn't allow for it. It does not. Now, if you had like a cherry burl, yeah, it might perform similarly, but it's going to have a lot of the same problems. And a cherry burl, you're going to have a lot bigger flaws because of where it grows. You know, briar is actually ideal in so many ways for pipes that I don't even answer the question anymore. When I see that pop up in groups, they're like, hey, I got this hunk of, you know, lignum vitae. Like, can I carve a pipe out of it? I'm like, no, you can't. Or I got a lot of, manzanita in my yard. Can I do? No, don't. Buy a $3 block from Steve and make a pipe out of that. It's just do that.
the simple answer is the best answer.
It is. Occam's razor, man.
Like, nine times out of ten with pipe making, the simple answer is the best answer. If you have to search for the answer to your question, chances are it's already been tried, and it's not done for a reason.
If you're asking the question, you probably should just go with briar. You walk through a forest and you're like, hey, this is a weird looking plant. Can I eat it? Probably not. If you have to ask that question, you should probably not eat that thing that you're about to eat. And I'm not trying to make anyone feel stupid. That's not what we're trying to do at all. It's the simple thing is, like, there's a reason knives are made out of steel and not copper. There's a reason that pizza. Now, I like pineapple on pizza. I'm going to admit it. I was going to make a pineapple joke about that. But there's just things that you do. And I know that's for a lot of people that are like, hey, I can't afford it. Fine. You know, if your neighbor has a plum tree, hack a limb off that and make a pipe. The problem being, though, you're going to have to – in fact, I just got this question. It was a guy – shit. Where was he? He was in Brazil, of all places, or some place in South America. I want to say it was Brazil. And he referenced the scientific name of this tree, and he said, can I use this? And I was like, I wouldn't recommend it. Pretty much anything outside of the States is trying to kill you, I've noticed. Like, outside of Europe and outside of the States, anything in a tropical area, it's biologically evolved to kill you. That's the whole thing. Australia, don't make any pipes from any weird wood in Australia. It'll probably kill you. Same thing with Brazil or you know, Central America. Just don't do it. Can you? Yeah. But if you ask the question, you may not like the answer a lot of times because, I don't know. It's just, can you make a pipe out of zebra wood? Yes, you can. Is it safe? I think so. I've heard that it is. Do I recommend it? No. Just get some cheap briar, make a pipe. You'll be more happy with it. Anyway, we beat the shit out of that dead horse.
So you had mentioned pineapple. I think any sane person would agree that pineapple does belong on pizza. But my question is, does that pineapple that's on the delicious pizza have to be cooked with the pizza or fresh?
Yes. No, that's a hard yes.
Okay, I agree with that.
You can't put fresh pineapple. No, you can't put a fresh pineapple on a pizza. Pineapple is really odd in that sense because I can't eat fresh pineapple. I found out this years ago. I don't even know why, but I was eating pineapple. My whole mouth felt like it was on fire.
Cooked pineapple. I'm that way with a lot of things that aren't ripe enough. Like if I have a somewhat green banana, I'll get instant dry mouth and my mouth will be, it'll feel like prickly in a way. Same thing with pineapple. That's not bad. Like for a long time there, I couldn't eat avocados unless they were on the verge of going bad. Yeah. Like I had the exact same thing, which is really weird.
Yeah. Tropical shit.
We should just eat meat because plants are literally designed to try to kill us chemically.
Yeah, filter your plants through your meat. That's how you get your vegetables. A cow eats grass. That's a salad. You eat the cow, you get your salad and your meat.
Science.
Logics, man.
Follow the science.
Another little thing, another little tip I always say to people who ask me, can I use this wood? Can you eat the fruit or the seed that thing produces raw? Then it's usually going to be okay. And I say that with the caveat of do your research and ask your questions, use briar. But most of the time, if you can eat the fruit and the seed or whatever that fruit produces, it's fruit, I should say, you're generally more likely than not going to die if you smoke it.
You're most likely not going to die. That's a great way to approach pipe making is, am I most likely not going to die if I make this? Then, okay, let's do that. Okay, so since this is our season one finale, and we're coming up on the holiday season, what are some of your New Year's resolutions for this coming year? And meaning not just like for the podcast, but for mainly for the podcast. But what are your New Year's resolutions for this coming year and what you expect and what people can expect and all that kind of stuff.
Business-wise, I'm going to be probably redesigning Morgan Pipes up a little bit. I'm not going to give away too much stuff, but the biggest thing to come out of last year is kind of last year is what's making this happen. Basically, like, great. Last year was awesome for business. I will add, last year was freaking awesome for most of the pipe and tobacco related businesses, period. But this year we encountered a bit of a delay in supply, a little bit of a backlog, and that there were many factors surrounding that. So basically I want to retool things a little bit to make them easier for my customers. I would love to say cheaper for my customers, but I'm seeing price increases on my end like every 4 months now, even for shipping, like USPS.
Oh, shipping has gotten ridiculous. Prices
once in a while, and now they're hitting it. They already hit it twice this year. So that, I'd say that's New Year's resolution for that. I want to get more organized. I got to pour some concrete in this portion of the shop, finish it up, get a studio situation going. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, it's really everyone's on kind of a knife edge, I've noticed. Like, no one wants to make real plans because you're like, are we going to be allowed to travel? Are we going to be able to do this? Are there going to be pipe shows? That's a big one. That was a question. Like, what do you miss most about the pipe shows? Personally, I've never done pipe shows, so I don't miss them. I do miss them community-wise because I think they're very good for the business and the community.
Well, I think
there, I answered that one.
I think missing pipe shows is really about the importance of pipe shows as a community for you know, the community as a whole. Because going back into, you know, what I was talking about earlier on how people don't really understand now what makes a great pipe anymore, or people don't understand what a pipe should appropriately be priced at. We're in a world right now of people can charge whatever the hell they want, and it's strictly based on the hype of who that person is. And I guarantee if half those makers went to a pipe show, they'd get laughed out of there because of their prices and or because the shaping is just so bad. I think pipe shows are extremely important for people to see things in person and realize that that was a very flattering photo you took of that pipe, but damn, this thing sucks. There's a lot of that, you know, and I think it's really just important for people to be able to see what a good true pipe maker is doing in person, but also the community aspect of it. And I think it just strengthens the, you know, the pipe world as a whole and what we get to do with each other and what we can appreciate and, you know, learning from other smokers and other carvers and all that kind of stuff.
Well, failure becomes a strength. I mean, if no one ever kicked your ass, then you don't know what it feels like. You know what I mean? Like, that's, it's kind of important to the, and I hate this term. I hate it so much. People saying you need to walk before you can crawl, or you need to crawl before you can walk. I don't like that. Some people hop up onto their feet and they start running. And then they jump over shit, you know what I mean, to paint that picture in your head. But I definitely feel that I've always tried to be very supportive of new guys specifically. I don't want to affect their interest in it because you are going to fail. I have tossed literally thousands and thousands of dollars worth of briar over the years because I kept screwing it up. There are pipes that I kept working on and I kept trashing them because they weren't good enough. You drill too deep, you shape it too close to the airways. And I mean, that stuff, you're supposed to do that. That's why I say, like, it, I've said it before, like, give away your first 10 pipes or charge like supply cost, you know, and you'll get better based on that. I don't want to go on all into this, but basically I think the shows are necessary. They would have helped me a lot to see other people's pipes, to see all the examples. Now at this point I've seen lots and lots and lots of pipes. I've owned lots of pipes. So I see things and I'm still growing and adapting. There's still things that I see from, you know, an older pipe maker, maybe no longer producing. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to use that. That's a really interesting thing to work on. But that brings up another interesting point. Another question that we had is, what's the most difficult pipe the most challenging pipe you've ever made?
Like as in a shape or a particular pipe? I mean, I feel like we kind of already answered that with, like, we didn't like making umpals or full bends because...
Not didn't like, but more effort went into it. Like, not challenging in a bad way, I'm assuming. Just...
Yeah.
Challenging.
I would say making my first blowfish. Making my first good blowfish, because I've...
Yeah.
Like I said, my brain doesn't work that way. I don't know how to just go. Like, I don't know how to shut out the world and just sit at a shaping wheel and just let my hands do the work and let the briar tell me what it's going to be. Like, I'm having a very hard time getting myself to be able to do that. But it was one of the most satisfying things when I made my first, like, truly good blowfish pipe. A good friend of mine ended up buying it. He's a collector, and he's kind of, his thing is buying pipe maker's first good blowfish. And I was really, you know, I was kind of honored that he bought mine, because that was kind of just validation of, hey, this is pretty good. But it took a lot of effort. Like, it was a challenge for sure.
I remember when you're going through it, and it's sometimes it just feels like you're beating your head up against a wall. Mine was more of a, how do I even realize this idea?
Because it was so technical.
And that, yeah, there were two that were that way. One of them flowed. The other one kind of was like, I don't know how to make this work. So I did one called the, and it might still be on my website. It's called the Bacomatic Ember Reactor. And it kind of follows this little theme that I had going with like steampunky type stuff. And it essentially is a triple chamber calabash, but the two other chambers, because you include the tobacco chamber in that weird formula, they're glass, like two glass chambers. And every single piece of that pipe was made from scratch out of brass. And there's copper fittings and there's silver work on it. And it is ridiculous looking. And it took forever to make. And the smoke splits into three brass tubes that are wrapped around a marble and then consolidates back into another cooling chamber. So it was intense to make. But there was that one. And then there was obviously the Calabashian smoke box, the Warden's Calabashian smoke box I made for AJ back in the day. And I mean, that pipe took months and months to complete, because there were certain things that needed to be addressed to even make it. Like, it's a table pipe that, I want to say it's like six or eight inches cube. And that's the calabash chamber. And then there's a bowl portion that fits on the top and it has a hose and the whole bit. And I remember when I was making that, I couldn't figure out how to do the windows, because the chamber has to be conical, that air chamber underneath. But the outside was flat. So what I ended up having to do was bore out that block on the lathe and then slide in a cylinder of acrylic epoxied in there, and then bore out the acrylic into a round shape. So we would have the flat side, and then remill the outsides. So it was flat on the outside and bored out on the inside and completely lined with acrylic windows. It was insane. Like, that I'm still thinking about it. I'm like, how the fuck did I do that? It was so intense. Of like, it was way above.
I didn't realize that all that went into that pipe. For those that haven't seen Chris's artisan work, you really should start looking into it, because most people know Chris as the Bones guy, but he's made some absolutely stunning pipes that are maybe not like the most visually appealing to me personally. Like,
yeah,
it's just not my style, because I look at something as how easy is that going to be for me to smoke all the time? But a lot of it is just so utterly fantastic in the technical side of it. It's just like, holy shit, that took way more planning than I even have the patience to think about.
And more often than not, they were never planned. That's the difference. That's what I was trying to reference with the artist and the craftsman. Like, I can't sit down and make a club pipe. I couldn't do 40 of the same shape, or I couldn't do, you know, fill a commission particularly exactly how they want it to be. Like, I'm going to sit down and be like, let's see what happens. And sometimes they suck and sometimes they're cool. I probably did about, I don't know, I'm going to guess like 600 or 700 pipes over my years, somewhere in there, maybe 600, with the very best of them probably in the last like 200 of them. But yeah, I don't know. I really don't have the time to do it anymore, but that would probably be the most challenging. That was a very challenging pipe. And oddly enough, I didn't sell it. It was a trade. But he insured it. I talked to him years ago. I'm like, what did you end up insuring? What did
you trade that for?
The painting of my grandpa and me that he did. Badass. It was a one-off original painting. And for those of you who don't know, he's no longer a pipe community guy, but it was from the YouTube pipe community, the original, you know, group of guys. I know it's gotten a lot bigger, and but he was known as Stash Warden because he had a pretty cool handlebar mustache, and he is a quadriplegic, so he's a very renowned artist in Florida, and now he's an entrepreneur. He owns multiple businesses in Florida, and he only really has the use of like his pinky. So he would paint on a tablet and make these amazing pieces and then thumbprint them to show that they were, you know, an original one-off piece, and then destroy the digital file. So a little different, but I really wanted it, and I traded him, and he ended up insuring the pipe for like $12,000. So
that's amazing.
That was kind of cool. He still smokes it. Yeah. Anyway, we should probably wrap.
Yeah, we should.
At some point.
So my part of the New Year's resolution thing was, I want to relax more. I want to figure out how to do that, because I am very type A personality. I don't sit still, and that's something I want to be able to do. And like today I spent a bunch of time building the start of what's going to be a privacy and windbreak barrier around our hot tub. And so I'm fully embracing hot tub life and relaxing in the hot tub and, you know, figuring out how to actually unwind and not have my mind going all the time. Because if I'm not thinking about pipes, I'm thinking about something else that I can be making or figuring out, or a problem I can solve, and I wanted to figure out how to not do that as much, at least half the time.
That's smart. In other news, Chris is buying a hot tub. You hear that, wife?
You need a hot tub. Chris and I have influenced ourselves. We've influenced each other a lot in the last couple of years on things like large purchases that we've made. And I can't say I regret any of them.
No.
So you should probably...
The Blackstone grill was cool. That was
You were Traeger. Like 6 months late to getting that.
Yeah.
You should have got that way sooner. No, but now you need a hot tub.
I want a hot tub so bad. I have to... If I'm going to do the hot tub, I have to get rid of the pond and the chickens, because that's all in like a quarter of my yard where like they literally rule the roost. And I want to build a deck up there and have a hot tub. But...
Yeah, so building a deck for mine is going to be pretty important right now. So we bought a used hot tub from some friends we knew. So, you know, we weren't worried about it being like destroyed. And I didn't really have a lot of time. And when we got it, lumber was still crazy high. Lumber's actually back to pretty much normal here, which is fantastic. But I just put like 6 inches of pea gravel down and then leveled it and put it on that. And I think in the spring, I'm going to drain the tub. I'm going to move it. I'm actually going to build a deck where it sits that I can insulate underneath. And then I'm going to put the hot tub back. And then I'm going to build a, you know, a four inch wall basically around it so I can put like R15 insulation in there. Or, you know, maybe I'll go bigger than that. I don't know. But I want to make it as...
go like 23 or 28 or something.
Yeah, but I don't really want it to take up a lot more room just because of where I have it. So I'm also thinking I might just stuff the cavity in there, like the cavity of the hot tub with insulation. I'm probably going to do that this year, to be honest, because if you look under there, it's all open. It's just got like three inches.
Oh, really? There's no spray foam?
There's 3 inches or four, well, probably 3 inches of spray foam on the tub itself, but then all the rest of it's open. So I can just stuff all that with insulation. That'll help. But we plan on this being a year round thing. And I really don't want my power bill to go like up $100.
Oh yeah.
So if we can
frozen north.
Yeah. I've been dropping it about 10 to 12 degrees when we're not using it. So during the middle of the week, when we don't have as much time to sit, because we're doing stuff, I drop it down to like 90, 92.
Yeah.
And then come Thursday or Friday, I'll jump it back up to like 103. And that's where we like it.
I used to have one.
But you did.
It was a Coleman inflatable hot tub. And I had it for like 2 years. And it was actually pretty cool. They were a pain in the ass to keep dosed with chemicals and stuff. But it was like the silly little redneck thing that I had in my backyard. Like my yard... at the time, before chickens and before kids, was like actually pretty nice. You know, I had the time to keep it up. Everything was, you know, looking good. And I had a hot tub back there next to my pond. And I got to the point where I was like, dude, this is just, it's really expensive to run it. And it's also just a pain in the ass to keep it clean. So I just got rid of it.
Well, we're committed. It is a fixture in our yard. And it's off my deck, and I'm building a like cage around it of barrier, so that way I don't really know what else I'll do with that if we ever got rid of the hot tub. Maybe I guess it could be a seating area, but either way. Nah. So that's my goal for this next year, is figuring out how to relax more. I mean, still get stuff done, of course, but just in my downtime, truly having downtime. And maybe that means I smoke a pipe more, because honestly, right now, the only time I smoke a pipe is when I'm in the shop making pipes. Otherwise, I don't. Maybe I need to figure out how to, you know, revisit that. Fall in love with...
hot tub pipes are nice.
Pipe smoking again, as just being a pipe smoker instead of a pipe maker.
Yeah. That's all part of your relaxation there.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up. Thank you all for listening to the first season of Beyond the Pipe. Can't wait to hear from you guys in the next one.
Thanks, guys. We appreciate it.
Later.